Perrin, it's yours. We give you the floor.
Thank you. Thank you all to be there, and thank you that I'm with you. So I will speak in... Ah oui, comme ça, c'est bon. Ah. OK. Parce que I have deux écrans, mais c'est bon. I will speak in English and French. I will speak in English for general things, and in French when it's too intimate for me because I'm dealing with a big theme. So I am, as Lolita and Olivier say, I will speak about me at the beginning. I am a sociologist at Cresson Team with very qualitative methods close to anthropology and ethnography. For students, I put a definition of ethnography if you want some stuff. Other people, I think it's okay. So I use different methods, film ethnography with a video camera, online ethnography to analyze digital social networks, and sound methods. My research teams in recent years have been environmental issues, more specifically ordinary inhabitant struggles against development projects as huge landfills, like décharge in French, or against deforestation or degradation of the forest of the taiga in deep, far north Russia. So I've been working for about 15 years in Russia and Ukraine. And in Ukraine, I did field works on the war in Donbass from 2014 to 2022. On the experience of women taken hostage by the Russian army and then released, and I follow them in their geographical trajectory and experiences. The new stage of Russia war in Ukraine, which is now a total war, at the end of February 2022, has dramatically changed my personal and scientific life, I can say. It's not possible for me to go to Russia because all scientific partnerships are stopped. And in addition, I risk having big problems with the secret service in Russia because of my past studies. And moreover, it's not morally evident to go to a country that has switched from authoritarianism to a form of fascism, we can say now. And I like Russia, it's not the problem, it's the politics. Then the CNRS, my employer, forbids me to go to Ukraine for security reasons, so I can't go in Russia, I can't go in Ukraine. In a professional activity. So my first reaction to war was to interview Ukrainian contacts and friends, to write articles, to make some interview. You can see it in the internet if you want. And to think what can I do in this war to describe the situation in conference to translate a lot from Ukrainian and Russian to French or English. I am telling you that in the beginning because I want to say right away that I'm not a specialist in war, that I didn't seek war, just as most Ukrainian people didn't want a war. So I don't want to become a specialist of war, and I don't want that war will be a commonplace in Ukraine. And I think it's important for me not to become a business science. But I decided to document the war in Ukraine with a moral and practical and political aim and with a strong daily reflexivity on my role as a bridge builder or translator from one war to another. My aim, my political and scientific aim, it's to counter the geopolitical, simplistic, superficial, exotizing discourse that I hear everywhere about Ukraine and Russia. So it's the war as it resonates here, we can say, in Western country, by a sensitive approach to give to hear other sounds, diversified, rich, deep life, deep experiences that I know in Ukraine and today in Ukraine resistance. And I want to documentate, give this news, it's kind of homage and moral and political lessons that I draw from Ukraine and from Ukrainians. And at that time, as I put it in French, in Europe, there is a kind of denial of the war, but not just about Ukraine, but of war, and avoidance of politics, the feminization of social conflicts, attempt to turn gaze away from social and environmental problems. So in France, we are in kind of comfort, and we don't see we don't want to see economical and social problems inside Europe, and so it's that kind of situation. So I would like to say that this qualitative documentation of the war is part of a huge documentation made by Ukrainians themselves, not only cultural actors, but ordinary people, state agents, rescue teams, soldiers. They make a lot of qualitative materials. So my work also aims to give an account of these efforts, not just my efforts as a scientist, but all the country makes some qualitative materials. And why? Because nowadays, digital technology and the massive use of smartphones, as our Finnish friend said yesterday, has transformed the way of collecting, preserving, and making available archive, and therefore the circulation of the news of the world by digital stuff. So you already said that, but sometimes we don't see it in Ukraine, this big collective production of archive. So here I want to show the work of Ukrainian artists and sound engineer, some friends, who have been collecting a lot of sound material from since February 22. And there are many topics about sensitive experience of war. There are many books, not so many, but there are books who are speaking about First and Second World Wars. There are a lot of aspects, for instance, destruction of urban landscapes, destruction of cities, neighborhood habitats, its historical and cultural heritage, milieu, ecosystem, so a lot of to do. We have to say that soundscapes and the relationship with sound have dramatically changed in Europe, in Ukraine, but Ukraine is it's a part of Europe. So since the total invasion of Ukraine in February, there is a very big change on soundscapes and sound experiences, and I want to follow that. So one of the goals, as written in the slide, of sound recording and broadcast, because there are some archive documenting, but there are a lot of projects with broadcast inside Ukraine. Some artists record and they put in radio, they put in internet to do what? There is the idea that if we share sound experiences, it can help to reduce distance between people who are dispersed by the war. For instance, with your friends, with your family, maybe you don't live in the same city in Ukraine, you are displaced. Sometimes you are displaced in Europe. So the sound broadcast help people to share and to speak together. Another element is when you listen to the streams. So inside the streams, you have sounds landscapes, you have backgrounds, you can say sounds landscapes, but you have personal stories. People speak about their own experiences. So the sound recordings now serve as archive of stories, of places, how the place transform, and interaction inside community and ecosystem. So it's kind of documentation. So some artistic recording project has started before February 22, for instance, by Slushni Reci. It's an association who has been created before the war, before 22, for cultural mediation in Odessa, in the south of Ukraine, to deal with environmental problems and of the Black Sea. And some landscape as everywhere are disappearing, and artists and ecologists wanted to make some to record soundscapes now, to maybe for the future when there will no after destruction. So there was already some project with artists and ecologists. And when the war happened in February 22, they say, okay, we have to change the idea. And we want to understand the experience of war and the environmental damage caused by war. And it's a big, there is a lot of discussion in Ukraine about war, about reconstruction, because they are a capitalistic way of thinking restoration, but there is a big civil society who fight for different restoration, different way of restoration, and there is a big issue with ecocide and environmental damage linked to the war. It's an idea who come from the First and Second World War. It's not just in Ukraine. So all the war have ecological effects. And so there was this project, and some people, some participants, some artists had to move because their place of residence was in bombing area, but they still follow the project. And in November 22, there was, for instance, an online presentation of a collective sound work of Ukrainian artists. It was 12, you can see it in Facebook if you want. It was 12 hours, and you could listen different soundscapes, different stories from people from all over Ukraine. And it was like land of return, land of care, so how to care, how to think about land in the context of war. So in this project, the participants, the artists, the curator wrote a text. So I will read it in French. So I made the translation in the slide. So qu'est-ce qu'ils ont dit? La guerre a laissé sa marque sur les paysages sonores qui nous entourent. Le silence des villes autrefois animées et déroutantes. Les alarmes définissent la routine quotidienne et les sons forts et soudains nous obligent à écouter tout ce qui nous entoure. Ce sont eux qui nous indiquent de nous mettre à l'abri en cas de danger. Ce sont eux qui nous informent sur le travail de la défense territoriale ou aérienne. En même temps, il y a beaucoup d'histoires personnelles. Le bruit d'une pelle qui creuse une tranchée dans le cadre de la défense territoriale. Un morceau apaisant dans nos écouteurs. Le silence dans une ancienne église près de la frontière, ou même l'abandon forcé de la pratique de la musique. Nos expériences sont différentes, mais elles sont unies par le fait que nous avons commencé à percevoir les sons différemment depuis le début de l'invasion à grande échelle. Nous avons émis en temps réel, depuis ces villes, pour partager nos expériences sonores personnelles qui ont pris de l'importance pendant la guerre. So the Artistic Research Laboratory on this experience of war was supported by a British Council in the framework of UK-Ukraine cultural season. So there are some stuff of mixing with London stuff. So, but today I want to show you more concrete things, because sometimes artist projects are a bit disappointing because they are very self-centered on themselves. And I worked for a long time with a Ukrainian sound engineer, Andriy Nijelsky, who worked for fiction and documentary films. So he's an engineer. I met him around 2016 because we had... he was part of a collective of Ukrainian director, operator, cinematographer, Babylon 13, Babylon 13, at Babylon 13. and this collective was formed in 2013 during the Maidan Revolution. And this collective of directors, operators, cinematographers, they have been filming since the first day of the revolution of Maidan until today. They made the video of 1 minute or 1 hour, a lot of stuff, and they show different landscape, but they take testimony a very different kind of material. And so with a friend, Jonathan Larcher, who a visual anthropologist, we invited him and other people from Babylon 13 to a colloquium we have been organized about cinema d'insurrection, how to make a documentary of wars. Because we had a seminar project, political camera, but if you are interested, it was like a seminar. So Andriy Nijelsky recorded different sounds in different cities of Ukraine, more or less next to the front line. And we will see together that there is different type of sounds and different way of experiencing things. So the sounds are source of physical and psychological scars. So it's a big deal. So I will not be very long about that, but there are some books about that. They make some lists. Which sounds can we hear in war? Which topics, which techniques? For instance, in war, we can, and each line, it's like a research project, we can say. So in the war, you can listen to the sounds of the air raids, of course, of bombing. So it's obvious. After, you can also listen silence and noise in sound environment of ruins and empty space. It's a bit boring for me to read everything, but you have different situations. For instance, Ukrainian explains that in a big city like Odessa or Kyiv or Kharkiv, the main thing is silence, but there is sometimes bombings. But it's kind of desurbanization, ruralization of the soundscapes because you don't listen all the cars and all the stuff we are used to in the city. So in the soundscape of destroyed city are very very calm when there is no bombing or alarms. So it can be a way to investigate. So it's a book, you can find it if you are interested. So there are some reflections, for instance, from from different people, from historical, like Joy Damoussi. And he says that sounds, but I wrote it in English and French, so sounds is deeply embedded in our memory. The auditory experience is something people retain, even in our modern digital... So even in our lives, even with internet, a lot of stuff, sounds is, you all know that, it's very intimate and it's part of our memory. So one of the stuff, and we will listen to it, it's the silence of the war. We can focus on the silence of the war. And it's one of the painful topics of the author. I will read it in Donc les participants, en fait, parlent beaucoup, voilà, de ce silence de la guerre, et c'est un sujet qui est très douloureux pour tous les auteurs, tous les artistes, enfin toutes les personnes qui prennent du son et qui, on peut dire, se prennent ces paysages sonores en pleine oreille, on peut dire. Et ce silence, en fait, résonne avec ce sentiment d'isolement, cette perte de communication, comme je vous disais, entre les amis, les collègues, la famille, enfin toutes les relations. Et même, en fait, dans des grandes villes comme Odessa, qui est très bombardée, il y a ce silence troublant qui est un peu le fond. Et du coup, tout ce qui est embouteillage, foule, déchets sonores constitue, représente plutôt un souvenir mélancolique d'un passé révolu. Un autre élément, en fait, ce sont les sirènes d'alarme. Donc, les sirènes des collègues, les sirènes du DRAC résonnent en moi d'une manière un peu étrange, parce que justement, c'est des sons qui sont très proches, mais disons que quand on l'entend tous les mercredis du mois à Grenoble, on sait que c'est un exercice. Et est-ce qu'on serait assez sérieux pour répondre à cette alarme en cas de vraiment catastrophe industrielle? Mais en Ukraine, c'est des sirènes d'alarme qui résonnent dans toutes les villes de l'Ukraine. Des sirènes d'alarme, aussi des sirènes d'ambulance, on a les deux. Et du coup, le flux parfois de ces sirènes est brutalement interrompu. Et on a ce silence qui... Il y a tout un débat sur le silence, est-ce que c'est positif ou négatif. Mais en tout cas, des expériences des Ukrainiens, le silence, c'est plutôt un moment justement où on serre les cœurs, parce qu'on a une sorte de disparition d'informations. Et on se demande encore, justement, on est entre l'alerte et la bombe, et plein de réflexions émergent sur le sens de la vie et comment ça se fait qu'on est, nous, encore vivants dans cet espace. Et c'est très difficile, justement, de penser au futur, au demain, au projet, enfin, tout ce qui fait nos vies. Et donc aussi, le silence cache des expériences traumatisantes. Et au début de la guerre, les gens réagissaient très rapidement au son d'alerte. Et finalement, en fait, il y a une sorte d'habituation à ces différents signaux. Et donc, les gens sont devenus, on peut dire, le formule comme ça, sont devenus un peu des experts en analyse et des signaux, des alertes, mais aussi des bombes, des différentes bombes, de leur orientation, de leur direction, de leur fréquence. C'est une sorte d'expertise comme ça qui est née. Et donc, c'est... d'un côté, il y a beaucoup d'humour, en fait, dans toutes les situations dramatiques. On a connu ça dans la Seconde Guerre mondiale ou d'autres guerres. Beaucoup d'humour, beaucoup de distance par rapport à ces expériences traumatisantes. Mais et cet humour tourne souvent autour de cette expertise, justement, de cette oreille qui s'est affinée, en fait, sur ces situations traumatiques. Mais cet humour et ces expériences cachent aussi... une anxiété qui évolue et dont il est difficile de poser des mots. Au début, en fait, en février 2022, les personnes étaient terrifiées, se couchaient instantanément par terre quand elles entendaient, en fait, des signaux d'alarme, parce qu'on associait justement signaux à bombes immédiates. Et maintenant, les personnes réagissent avec plus de retenue. On a même parfois des vidéos sur Twitter, Instagram ou autres de jeunes qui vont faire de la trottinette quand l'alarme... où il n'y a plus vraiment de réaction de survie. Et parce qu'on croit justement lire les signaux et parfois ça ne marche pas, quoi. Et ce qui est intéressant, c'est que le silence lui-même est catégorisé de manière différente, que ce soit si on est habitant ou si on est combattant. Et souvent, sur le champ de bataille, le silence est ce qui arrive avant la tempête. Donc, comme disaient d'autres, Joy Damusi sur la Seconde Guerre mondiale, beaucoup de soldats ont écrit à cette époque dans leurs journaux ou dans les lettres à leur famille, et maintenant c'est sur les réseaux sociaux, que le pire c'est d'écouter justement ces bombes, ces artilleries, mais quand les bombes arrivent, on arrive encore à se repérer dans l'espace sonore, et quand il y a le silence, bah, on ne sait pas par où ça va reprendre. Donc voilà, il y a une sorte de correspondance, on peut dire, à travers les âges. Et donc cette juxtaposition de bruit de silence est traduit en fait le paradoxe de l'expérience de la ligne de front pendant le conflit. Donc d'un côté on a ce silence sinistre et de l'autre la cacophonie de la guerre industrielle, on peut dire. Et donc dans un article que je vous ai indiqué qui traite de la Première Guerre mondiale. Il est dit justement en fait que les combattants du front occidental décrivent très bien justement ce passage entre le bruit de 4 années de violence, on peut dire, au silence. Donc ce 11 novembre 2018. Je ne sais pas si vous connaissez cette pièce en fait qui s'appelle The End of the War, la fin de la guerre. Et en fait, c'est un enregistrement d'une minute avant la signature de la fin de la guerre, et d'une minute avant la signature et d'une minute après la signature. Et donc, on voit en fait, de manière sonore, en fait, la fin de la guerre. Je vais vous le passer. Et beaucoup de chercheurs s'étonnent justement qu'il n'existe pas plus d'enregistrements audio de la ligne de front. De cette Première Guerre mondiale, parce que la technologie était déjà disponible. Mais bon, après, moi, je ne suis pas historienne de ça. Donc, je vais vous passer déjà ça. Donc, ça, ça a été enregistré donc, le 11 novembre 2018, une minute avant, une minute après. Mais ça dure un peu moins. Hop. Donc en fait, les films de guerre, souvent, ils sont basés sur des effets qui bombardent littéralement les spectateurs de son, alors que, comme vous le savez, le paysage sonore réel a une structure beaucoup plus complexe et peut nous dire beaucoup en fait sur la réalité militaire. Il y a quelques historiens, pas Audouin Rousseau, mais enfin des gens qui travaillent avec lui, qui justement par les écrits essayent de comprendre par les descriptions d'expériences sonores des soldats. Ce qui se passait aussi sur le front. Et donc l'un des moyens d'accéder un peu au vide, à la confusion qui est causée par la guerre, est de considérer justement l'expérience sensorielle de la vie quotidienne, pas seulement les bruits de bombes, mais un peu les sons de bombes. Maintenant, en fait, je vais pas trop le temps, mais je vais vous passer quelques productions en fait de Andrei, et en fait il y a des sons qu'il m'a envoyés parce que je lui ai demandé, et puis il y a des sons qu'il a lui-même publiés sur les réseaux sociaux. Donc ceux qui sont publiés sur les réseaux sociaux sont accompagnés d'un texte, et sans plus attendre, je vais vous passer cette bande son. Donc là, ça a été enregistré vraiment au début de la guerre, en avril 2022, dans sa cour d'immeuble. En fait, lui, il habite à Kiev. Et donc, il découvre comme les autres, chez lui, en fait, le début de la guerre.
«
Donc là, c'est la découverte. En fait, le, je ne l'ai pas écrit en anglais. Donc, the Ukrainian cinema is very active before the war. Documentary and fiction Ukraine cinema is very creative, very interesting. And so at the beginning, he was at home. And after, directors, they went in different cities in Ukraine and made some documentation again. So the second one, it was next to Kyiv in a period that everybody thinks, Putin and Europe leaders, that the war will be finished in 3 days. So it was when the Russian army was next to Kyiv, and he made some record in... So after I asked him to make photo of the place when he made sound recording, but I don't have so many time, so I will just give you the last one to speak with you. So there are different kind of spaces, big city, for instance, Irpin. It's well known now. It's like next to Kyiv. And when the Russian occupies the territory, and after when you have a desoccupation, liberation of the city, some sound engineer makes some work about the transformation of the sound landscape. So I will don't maybe this. So in cemetery too, there are a lot of dead soldiers. So a lot of activity we can say in cemetery. I will show you just a bit. And last but not least, j'en ai trop. The last one. Okay, so the idea is to documentate the documentation, and after I want to go to Ukraine to find some for a place, for instance, to make a history of soundscape with archive, for instance, before the war, and to see how the same place changed. So it's working progress. So I will be pleased to speak with you.
Thank you very much, Perrine. Yes, Leila.
Thank you so much for your presentation. I wish you didn't have to make this presentation, and I wish you didn't have to do this work. Just like I wish I don't have to do the, you know, my kind of research. We would hope that maybe we would learn something from the wars that happened not so long ago also on European soil. Maybe not so much question, but a comment. During the Bosnian conflict, because the digital age, you know, we didn't have internet, we didn't have the possibility of recording sound was not so easily accessible. You could do it, but it was much more difficult. Also, the electricity was not there. So a lot of the photographs that were taken during the war became crucial maybe not necessarily during the conflict, but after the conflict, of reconstructing the narrative, of using it in trials and using it in also, like, you know, prosecution of the crimes. And so I think the work that you're doing is not, it's very important, not just for today, but also in the context of post-war, of, you know, putting together the narrative and also perhaps using them in trials. And so it's not really a question, but more so of a comment. In Bosnia also, we had an incredible amount of cultural energy that came about as a means of resistance, as a means of kind of addressing this horrible, terrific violence that was happening at the time. I'm just maybe wondering, then you mentioned you were going to go to Ukraine and take these pictures before and after. I think it's also important, it might seem like now the end of the war is not quite so clear, but it will come. I from the Bosnian experience, it will come. The reconstruction will also happen this way or another. There will be debates. At the end, it will be settled. But, you know, these sensory experiences remain very deep inside within the survivors. And also certain sounds have triggers. And so in Bosnian case, we're talking 30 years after the fact, and we're still talking about it and doing the research because it's still very much present, you know. And this was kind of revelation to me as an architect, because I was always thinking about, I live in a post-war society, so this is part of our daily life. But as an architect, I was always primarily thinking about reconstruction, collective memory. How do you bring something that was destroyed in an authentic way, but also, you know, thinking about its destruction? But within the sensory experience, it's very immediate. It brings back certain emotions that is not possible otherwise. So I'm also thinking, like, I'm wondering, do you have maybe a network or a plan, or maybe how to work with this kind of sensory experience in the post-war? Maybe it's too early to talk about the post-war, but let's be optimistic. Do you have maybe an approach or a plan or hopes of how to maybe use sound in the post-war mm-hmm. context?
Thank you. I don't think about post-war now, but in Ukraine society, there is big issue and discussion about reconstructions. It's kind of caring of territories of people, so people think about that. Because it's kind of hope of victory and all that. So there are a lot of cultural workers that already maybe too much thinks about what to do in future and what to make. And a lot of people belongs to community with participative methods. So but we live in an epoch where there is plenty of methods and plenty of documentation. The problem is how to do it, that it's important and relevant for people. It's it's not just about methods, it's about which voice. So we will see.
Thank you again.
For me, my method, it's to look what are people doing, that everybody is like a researcher, everybody is as documenting every soldier or every friend or every common worker. They have a documentation activity, and for me it's a way to participate, to show the diversity and the complexity of documenting from ordinary people. It's kind of a way to access and to make links between the different experiences. So, and when I see that something is missing, I will record it. No, it's like the way. But,
Do you have a comment? Thank you very much, Perrin. We have to move on the next presentation for Saskia to have time for two.
Thank you.